Hey, it's Tony. On today's show, we will talk to Ron Flatter about what's going on with the Preakness and the Triple Crown, and we'll also talk to Taylor Twellman about Team USA keeping their coach for another 4 years and the rift between the head of FIFA and the European soccer teams. But first, commerce.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
I watched the highlights this morning. Look, he went six innings and gave up two runs.
It's not bad.
He didn't get bombed. He lost the game because the Dodgers don't win any games at the moment.
Yeah, fine.
They don't win any games. They lose to the Red Sox. They lose to the Cubs. Wilbon, who, of course, makes the PTI show the most Chicago-centric show in the history of the world, it just talks about the Cubs all the time. Cubs, Bulls, Blackhawks, Bears. Can't wait for them to move to Indiana. Can't wait.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
A few small notes to start out. One is that we will be dark next week. We're going to take the week off. Everybody is scattered to the winds, and we're going to take the week off and resume the next Monday. Not to worry.
That's right.
I worked it out in my head, maybe.
We'll see.
There are 52 weeks in a year. If you do three shows a week, it's 160, 156.
You might do a phone confessional.
Well, we could do that. Yeah, we could. We could film ourselves. Yeah, that would be fine. But I wanted to do 150, and everybody on the show, and when I say everybody, I mean, you know, Michael and Nigel and Sean say, "What? Do what you want to do. Don't. What are you announcing numbers for?" And because I'm obsessed with numbers, so we'll get to 150. Don't worry about it. But I'm going to take this. I took a week off to go play golf in Florida, and I'm going to take a week off, and that will be that. That's one small note.
150 has a nice ring to it, like the year 2015.
Yes, 2015 is, you know, if I could have gotten married again, I would have gotten married in 2015. I would do that. What are you pointing
to? We got some emails about that.
Well, we'll get to it later.
Okay.
And we'll get to it later. I got the year wrong.
I just think going forward, we should celebrate it as 2015.
It's probably the right thing to do. I can blame other people for constantly putting in my head that it was 2015, but I will just shoulder the responsibility and say that I got it wrong, and I'll try not to get it wrong again. What else do we have? Oh, I have to make this note that Josh Maurer, our friend Josh Maurer, who is a broadcaster for the Milwaukee Brewers, was also for 10 or 11 years broadcasting the Boston College basketball games. And the new coach comes in, Luke Murray, who is the son of Bill Murray, and fires the broadcasters, or has the school fire the broadcasters. Josh Maurer and Kevin Collins, I believe, is
that's
his
correct.
Name.
Yes.
Because so we don't want anybody attached with the losing. You know, I think that's awful. Josh Maurer was our first intern at PTI. We like Josh. We went to a game last year when he was broadcasting. We're very fond of Josh, and he's a very good broadcaster. And the notion that the broadcasters had something to do with the losing at Boston College is insane. And this is another Boston College move. Boston College was the first school to their patient zero on destroying the geography of the conferences in the United States of America. I understand if a coach comes in and says, I want to clear the decks of everybody who was associated with this. So I assume he's going to go down to the janitorial staff. I assume he's going to go to the administrative staff. I'm sure. I think you have to do that. If you're going to fire the broadcasters, you have to fire everybody.
Yeah.
You have to clean the entire program out. You want to do that, you do that. It is irresponsible and 100% wrong of the administrators of Boston College to do this. It's 100% wrong. It's as simple
do you know
as
what
that.
The radio guys represent continuity with your fan base. Those are the guys who resonate the most with your longtime alumni and, you know, supporters.
Stinks. That's my opinion on that. Also, one other small note. Pablo Torre, our friend Pablo Torre, on the podcast, the Pulitzer Prize-winning podcast. A, I didn't know podcasts could win Pulitzer Prizes. B, I don't know why I never won one, but I've never won one. But Pablo on Pablo Torre finds out has a second deal that Kawhi Leonard has made with apparently agents for the Los Angeles Clippers. The deal may not be in place anymore, but he reports that it was in place. Look, let me just say this. Kawhi Leonard's manager, Kawhi Leonard's agent, Kawhi Leonard's advisors have failed Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi Leonard will take the fall. He's got to be suspended. He's got to be suspended for circumventing the attempt to circumvent the salary cap rule with Los Angeles Clippers. And the Clippers have to be punished for this as well, if indeed this is true. This is a second. There's an investigation going on now into the first one, and this was a previously undisclosed or heretofore undisclosed second one. And yes, Kawhi Leonard probably understood exactly what he was doing and should be punished. But if you have a lawyer, if you have an agent, if you have a manager, you just can't let him do this. You have to say, or you have to quit. You have to say, Kawhi, you do this, I'm out. Because it's obvious that it's wrong.
Yeah.
It's obvious that it goes against the rules. And, you know, the guy's not getting any help. Okay. Other things. I have my Hawaiian shirt and shorts. I have them. Mark Lerner, the owner of the Washington Nationals, sent them over. I wore them on the show the other night in the final segment. I wear the Hawaiian shorts to bed. Makes me very, very happy. Thank you to the Nationals. The Nationals lost again. The Nationals went on a road trip to Atlanta and Philadelphia, two teams above them in the standings, two teams better than them in every way. They're better teams. They lost 7 out of 8. They lost last night, and that was a give-up game. The baby manager gave up. I blame the baby manager on this one. He kept Meatball Mikolas out there for no reason at all through about 6 innings, and he gave up 6 runs by the third, Michael, third of the fourth. He gave up 6 runs, and they were down either 6-1 or 6-2, and he didn't take him out. He didn't try to win. Didn't try to win that one. Was accepted the loss, and the
down to the 6-1 after 3.
Yeah, 6-1 after 3. All earned. They had 8 doubles by the fourth inning. 8 doubles by the fourth inning, Philadelphia. Come on. That's a lot of doubles. That might be the record.
Yeah,
they were just roping the ball, and there was no attempt to change pitchers. And it was a give-up game. That's on the manager. And at the other night, they DFA'd Mark Littell. They have to do the same with the meatball. They have to. They made a big deal last night about how he was celebrating last night his 10th anniversary in the major leagues. And the announcers talked about how great that was. It's fine. It's a lovely accomplishment. Not everybody gets to do it.
Yeah.
But he's done. He's done. I'm not going to be surprised. Although he bunts. They could bring him in for sacrifice bunts.
Situational.
But to me, I think you have to.
And he defends his teammates.
Yes, he's very good. You know, he's probably very popular. Maybe you don't have to do it, but
on the other side of the ball, just look at the top three batters. You had Dylan Cruz, 5 at-bats. How many strikeouts? 4. You had Chaparro and House got a combined 1 hit.
No, they were terrible. That's the top of the order without James Wood out there. That's top of the order. And C.J. Abrams had a terrible at-bat. Bases loaded, 1 out within striking distance, and he struck out. Eesh. He did the same thing against Atlanta last week. I know he leads the National League in RBI. I'm not saying he's having a great season. I don't want to trade him. He's had terrible at-bats when it counted in these two particular games. I watched every single pitch.
But the Nats are still
an idiot.
Right there with the wild card, right?
No. No, they're not right there. They're probably 5 or 6 out. They've lost 7 out of 8.
That's 6. They're at 1% chance of making the wild card.
Okay.
You're now at the point of the season where you look at, they have the Reds coming up, they have the Cubs. You're looking at how other teams are going to use their games against the Nats to position themselves.
They didn't try to win. They should have gone and got Mikolas.
Yeah.
They should have put in some relievers. They had a chance to win that game, tie the game, do something in the game. They did not avail themselves of that opportunity. And I lay that on the manager, maybe the general manager as well, called him up and said, no, leave the guy in. But I think it's possible you can designate for future assignment. Is that what it's called? Designate for future assignment?
Mm. I thought it was just designated for assignment.
But whatever it is. Designated for assignment?
Yeah.
Yeah, that means you're done with him.
Yeah, he's...
Maybe you don't want to do that. I don't know. But these 9 arms that you traded for, let's see some of them. Bring them in.
Although I just heard about Connolly early.
He's on the DL.
Yeah,
right?
He was doing some simulated batting practice.
And he got hurt again.
Yeah, he's like, doesn't feel good. No, all right, shut it down completely.
Let me just give you 2 words, Josiah Gray. 2 words. When was the last time Josiah Gray pitched?
1964.
All-star pitcher. Doesn't pitch anymore.
Yeah.
Doesn't pitch. I got to tell you this one little golf story. I played 12 holes yesterday. You say, why did you play 12? I had some friends who were on six when I got into a cart and met them at six and played in. It was fine. It was 10,000 degrees.
Always good to start on the hardest hole in the golf course.
Yes, that's true.
It's a gentle warm-up.
10,000 degrees. My first shot went 12 feet. I was about 130 out. I took out a five rescue, went about 12 feet. I was terrible, but I didn't warm up at all. I didn't take any swings. I was happy to be out there. I was very happy to be out there.
Yeah, happy to be with your friends.
16 is the last par three on the course. It's over water. The old people's tees, it's about 110-yard shot.
You know, depending on the pin.
Well, this pin was in the middle. Okay. Middle front. I hit a shot, hit it a little bit too long, landed in the rough on top of the trap behind the green. It's a very, very delicate pitch shot that I'm not good enough to hit. I understand I'm not good enough to hit.
It's a hit and hope.
One of the caddies, Eric, who I know very well and think Eric's very good, Eric and Tachi were out there. Eric said, look, go all the way out left. You're going to leave yourself a 25-foot putt, but if you try to chip the ball at the hole, you're going in the water. You're not going to be able to do it. And it makes sense to me, so I'm attempting to chip into the rough, get one bounce, land on the green, have a 20-foot putt. I hit a great chip exactly where I wanted to land it, with one exception. There was a sprinkler head there.
Oh,
it hit
no.
The sprinkler head, went in the water. Went in the water. I hit the best chip I ever hit.
Oh.
And it went in the water. I didn't know what to do. I just dropped the ball on the green.
You take a little piece of turf and put it over the sprinkler head when they are in play right around the greens?
I didn't know there was a sprinkler head there.
Yeah, why would you?
And nobody knows. And so I just thought, okay, this is me. This is golf. This is why I love it, and I'm terrible at it, and it's okay. And I'll come back soon, and I'll try it again.
Yeah, you hit the shot.
I hit the right shot.
That's
and then
the
I went to 17 and hit a fine tee shot. 17 is the hardest shot, second shot to an elevated green, the hardest shot. I never get it on the green. I constantly shank it. I constantly put it on the ground, in the heather. I did it three times yesterday. I picked up the ball and just flipped it onto the green. It just, you know, I probably, in the 12 holes that I played, I probably shot 110. I was that bad.
How many golf balls did you lose?
I lost three golf balls yesterday. It's too many. But luckily, I have a three-pack of golf balls in the car, and I will be able to replace
them. Divided by three? Okay, trying to figure out your per-hole rate. Okay.
Just very bad. I was really bad. And yet, I had a good time. I preferred doing that to whatever else I could have done. I would prefer doing it today, but there's no carts today because it's wet.
And it's about 1,000% humidity outside.
Michael, am I wrong about Kawhi Leonard? I'm not excusing him,
no.
but doesn't his team of people have to say, you can't do this?
That's why you have a team.
Yeah. You just can't do it. And if he won't listen to you, you quit. That's what you do. You say, okay, then what is the point of me being here? There's no point. Okay. It's the Open. I didn't want to sound this angry on the last Open before I'm going away.
You hit a great chip.
I did hit a great chip. I landed I wanted to land it.
And Nigel, you got your Red Sox.
Yes. I don't even know what's going
on. Is that
on.
Eight in a row?
I think it's eight in a row now.
It's like 25 out of 26.
Yeah.
Something unbelievable.
A certain member of our household turned the game off just at the end of the game.
But. Well, I thought they were down 7-5 late. And I thought, well, the White Sox are a first place team.
Wait, your extended household has Red Sox fans.
Yeah, we're getting the Nesson feed.
Oh, yeah.
It's lovely.
Yeah.
So they win 12-11. They don't lose. I can't explain it. It's unbelievable.
Because when they have bases loaded and one out, their best hitter doesn't strike out.
No. I mean, there was a lot of that in the first 3 months
of the
season.
And when they have a manager and he thinks he can win a game, he doesn't leave a pitcher in too long.
No. They're playing like it's the playoffs right now. Everything is huge.
Yeah. This is the first time I've been publicly critical. I mean, I thought they gave up last night and just said, get us out of here. Get us out of here 1-7. It's okay. If we hit and we win, fine. But we're not going to do all the things we would do. Do you think in a playoff game they'd have left that guy in?
Oh, there's no chance. No.
No, they wouldn't have left him in.
And that would have given you the split, and then you leave
that doesn't mean you win, but you give yourself a chance.
Give you a chance. I mean, if you win that, you get the split, and you think, all right, well, that's not, you know, we started out.
But Dylan Cruz, well, James Wood is out. What is Dylan Cruz batting? I mean, he's not. It's the overall two pick in the draft, and currently he's not a major league hitter. Hmm? 220?
221.
And what is Shaputzfa? What's Shaputzfa
batting?
And what's House batting?
Brady House, 228.
Okay, so they're all in the 2-2s. They're all there. So I would say this, and I've said this in the text chain. I think if you're the manager and you have vacated third and vacated first, you have to give Shaputzfa and House 10 straight games. You have to see what they've got. You know, don't jerk them around in the lineup. Don't do that. Put them out there in those positions and see what you've got.
And context matters. You're going against Sanchez for, what, six innings last night? So,
yeah, but they got to Sanchez pretty early. I mean, they hit Sanchez. So they have this kid, Andrew Pinckney, and it's his first major league game ever. And in his second at bat, he hits a home run. It's fabulous. It's a lovely story. His parents are in the stands. His girlfriend is in the stands. They interviewed them. It's great.
Great.
And then the next time he comes up, he gets yanked for a lefty-righty situation. He gets yanked.
You got to let the kid roll at that point.
That's what I think. Jacob Young, could you look this up? Did he have a double and a triple last night?
Mm-hmm.
I think he did.
For you. Yeah.
I think he had a double and a triple. Late in the game, they take him out on a righty-lefty. He is a righty. They had a righty pitcher in there. Baby manager takes him out. Who does he put in? Tania. What does Tania do?
Strikes out.
That's all he ever does is strike out righty-lefty. I think Jacob Young had a double and a triple. I'm sure he had a triple.
I know he had the triple.
I'm seeing him with a triple. Not somebody named Ford got a double.
Harry
Gerald
Ford.
Gerald Ford?
No, Harry Ford, the substitute catcher. Okay. But he had a triple last night. Took him out. They took out a guy with a triple, took out a guy with a home run, put in people who did not produce. I'm watching too carefully. I have to stop.
My goodness.
I have to stop. We'll take a break. Is it Ron Flatter or is it Taylor Twellman?
Ron Flatter.
Ron Flatter when we come to try to explain what happened to the Preakness to us. Try to explain. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
They say that every day your business is late to AI, you actually fall 2 days behind. Look, the competition is only moving faster, and trying to keep up can feel completely overwhelming. Fortunately, there's NetSuite Next. You probably already know NetSuite as the trusted AI-powered business management suite used by over 43,000 customers to securely connect financials, inventory, HR, and CRM into one single source of truth. Well, NetSuite Next is a massive leap forward because AI is now built into everything you do. It automatically surfaces custom insights throughout your day, deploys AI agents to handle routine work, and lets you ask questions just like you're talking to a colleague. It's customized for a wide range of industries, and honestly, if you need a system to scale your business, this is what you should use. Whether you earn millions or hundreds of millions, it's time for NetSuite Next. For the first time ever, you can try NetSuite Next for free if your revenues are at least in the seven figures. Woo! Go to netsuite.ai/Tony. Built for every industry, ready for every boardroom. netsuite.ai/Tony.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Open a window, let the fresh breeze in.
If you're wondering why this singer is so great, how beautiful her voice is, don't wonder. It's sent to us by Michael Granberry, who writes, Ruby Greenberg grew up in the Rocky Mountains of Colorado, but now lives in San Diego County, not far from the Troubadour in L.A., which served as the musical home of so many great artists in the 1970s. Ruby is much younger than those Troubadour albums, but those are the greats whose music to this day moves her the most. She continues to be inspired by, among others, Joni Mitchell, Carole King, and Christine McVie. Ruby sees her original music as embracing a modern folk style while invoking nostalgia for the acoustic sounds that she finds the most inspiring. This is the first of two songs by Ruby today. This is called Pictures of Us. Plays in our friend Ron Flatter. We have two guests today. I'm in over my head on horse racing and soccer, yet we have Ron and we have Taylor Twellman. And I want to get to what has happened with the Preakness and ask a series of questions that I'm sure Ron has asked himself. But let us start with the passing of Robbie Alborato, who won Triple Crown races, did he not?
He did. So he's best remembered for his association with Curlin.
Curlin,
who,
yeah.
20 years ago, two-time Horse of the Year, most recently in the Triple Crown Series. He rode Swiss Skydiver, a filly, to win the Preakness during the COVID year in 2020. So, yeah, he certainly was. And he also rode Mineshaft, another Horse of the Year going back to 2003. But he also was a guy who just never had any good luck with injuries. He had two skull fractures, and he had congenital heart trouble.
Yes, he had heart problems.
That's what killed him.
Yes.
He died in his sleep. He was staying at the home of our friend, Kenny McPeak, in Saratoga. Kenny was looking after him. They were very, very close friends. Kenny hired him as an exercise rider in the mornings, and Robbie rode Kenny's best horses, Torpedo Anna, Mystic Dan. You remember those names recently.
Yes.
He was always there. He was absolutely a fixture in the morning. So,
okay.
Yeah, that was unfortunately, he passed away. He just had a heart procedure and then just didn't wake up the other day.
So this is our tribute to Robbie Alvarado. And then we want to get into the reason that we called originally. Can you explain briefly what has happened? What is the original intent of Churchill Downs and the NYRA?
Well, the short answer to your question is no, I really can't. I'm still trying to get the answers, but here's what I know. There were two news conferences this week and two announcements. One was Monday, when basically the Kentucky Derby and Belmont Stakes got together to create a coalition, add three summertime races, and then a final race in the fall as part of a series to crown a three-year-old champion. And conspicuous by its absence was the Preakness. You've reported on this. That was what happened Monday. The Preakness, they hold a news conference with the governor of Maryland, Wes Moore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's at the State House in Annapolis, and it was a splashy deal. A noon news conference that, of course, started at 12:49. And here was Wes Moore, and he was slick. And then the Maryland Jockey Club guy, Bill Knopf, comes out, and he was calm. And the NBC guy, NBC, just re-upped with the Preakness, and he was smart, and off they went. What I've been told was this was originally going to be the other way around. The Preakness announcement was going to come first. But you may remember the Kentucky Derby, Churchill Downs, tried to buy basically the NIL of the Preakness, the imaging rights and all of that, for $85 million. And the state of Maryland used its bargaining chip, its contractual chip, to block that. They just matched it, and they kept it. And that ticked off Churchill Downs. So I think there might be a little bit of spite here, Tony. And Fox, which televises the Belmont Stakes and is in bed with the New York Racing Association, they tried to get the Preakness, and they lost to NBC. While NBC's part of this alliance with Churchill Downs and with the Kentucky Derby and the Belmont, they do the Derby, right? Well,
right.
Fox has got a little spite in this, too. And from what I'm told, that's why this news conference was rushed onto a Monday. It was a disaster in terms of organization. Questions went unanswered. The reporters were told to submit their questions in writing 2 hours in advance, so it was going to be curated, and none of those questions was asked, and then the whole thing fell apart like 10 minutes after it started. So
okay. It
was rolled out very embarrassingly. So you can see there's a lot of unanswered questions in all this.
So let's go line by line if we could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Churchill Downs people in the NYRA, in establishing this six-race deal to crown a three-year-old champion, they deliberately torched the Preakness, yes or no? They deliberately torched it, yes?
Absolutely. Absolutely they did. They will say they didn't, but they did.
Okay. And the Belmont was involved in this, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Because
okay.
they're, remember, because they're now only 2 weeks after the Preakness. The Preakness is now 3 weeks after the Derby.
That's right.
With the
That's
Belmont
right.
being only 2 weeks later, now the Belmont gets squeezed.
In the if they adhere to the traditional schedule, and we mm-hmm. always have to say those things, mm-hmm. did this seem, it was a deliberate torching of the Preakness, but did it seem to you to also be, and feel free to disagree, a deliberate torching of the Triple Crown as we understand it?
No. I'm going to say no because it's still a five-week series. Mm-hmm. And again, if the Preakness had made its move first by pushing its race back a week, then that all seems reasonable at that point. Okay, Preakness moved back a week because the last two Kentucky Derby winners weren't showing up. I think part of the reason for that, by the way, is they weren't staring down the barrel of a one-and-a-half-mile Belmont Stakes 5 weeks after the Derby. It was only a mile and a quarter. Well,
That's
it's
right.
supposed to go back to a mile and a half next year. Supposed to. Now we're hearing rumblings that it might not. But we'll see about that. Now the Belmont squeezed, and do they want to go ahead and maybe move back a week themselves?
That,
so that's why
is,
I don't think
yeah.
the Triple Crown was torched. I think it can
okay.
still be fine, just fine.
This is what I wanted to ask. And I say this so that everybody understands, there is no commissioner of horse racing in the United States of America. There ain't Adam Silver or Rob Manfred or Roger Goodell. Doesn't work that way. So each of these tracks operates independently. Nothing ever happens to the Kentucky Derby because there's nothing before the Kentucky Derby that would force them to move. That's consequential. But mm-hmm. now the Preakness not only moves a week later, but goes on Sunday, which is bizarre to me, goes on Sunday. Now Belmont is in the two-week position, the 2 weeks after, with a longer race most of the time, the only mile-and-a-half race of consequence on mm-hmm. dirt in America. They have always been reluctant to move. I mean, they like where they are. Do you anticipate them moving as well?
I think they're going to have to. And by the way, everything I've suggested to you in terms of my point of view is very debatable. I mean, I could initiate a pitchforks and torches outside my door right now just from what I've said. But
yeah.
at the same time, I think there's two problems with the Belmont Stakes moving back a week. One is the whole idea, the tradition, the five-week Triple Crown, blah, blah, blah. The other part of it, though, is the New York racing calendar, because that then dominoes everything down the line. There are races set up after the Belmont Stakes for three-year-olds to come into, the Jim Dandy, which will be part of this new series.
Mm-hmm.
The races that are not part of it, like the Haskell in New Jersey, which also seems to have gotten squeezed out. And so there are other points on the calendar that are associated with horses from the Belmont Stakes, and even some of the other races on that card, because there's a lot of big races on that card. They don't want to domino a problem coming afterward. That's been some of the New York Racing Association's reluctance. I think they're just going to have to suck it up and do it, and then we're going to hear about something, either
okay.
a shortening of the race or a delaying of it by 1 week.
I believe I've talked to you about this. I've talked to David about this. I've talked to Rich Podolsky about this in texts. The Triple Crown is the only thing that most people look at with horse racing, casual fans. The Triple Crown. It's been going on for 1,000 years. There's been about 15, 16 winners, whatever it is. It's a big deal. Continues to be a big deal. That's why when trainers skip the Preakness, people like me go, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Given the fact that the Triple Crown is not just a big deal in terms of notoriety and history, but it's a big deal in terms of stud fees. You know, it's a, mm-hmm. it's worth a lot more money than the actual race is worth. Will trainers now, in your opinion, go to the Preakness and be alive for the Triple Crown?
Yes, I do. And then that, the question then becomes, will they go to a Belmont Stakes that's either longer or it's going to be within 2 weeks if it doesn't move? And that's, and then do you say, if they do go and win it all, is there an asterisk? We can deal with that later. But to your direct question, I think they're going to show up for the Preakness. One thing that's gone unanswered, I did ask Bill Knopf, who's the head of the Maryland Jockey Club, will they raise the purse for the Preakness, and will they offer a bonus for horses who come out of the Derby and then maybe, if the winner then wins the Preakness, will they offer a bonus? And so I was asking that to myself first. I merely asked him about the purse structure in a text message, and he comes back to me and says, We're still working on it, basically. We're looking at maybe the purses and bonuses. So he volunteered the idea of bonuses without my actually asking about it. So stay tuned on that. I think they're going to do something in that vein, and that's going to force Belmont's hand, because then the Belmont would be looking at being a $2 million race, while the Preakness would be more, and the Kentucky Derby is, what, $7 million.
And by the way, the Preakness now, everything is owned by the state of Maryland.
Yep.
So you can get taxes. You can get Preakness taxes. The governor can say, we're going to do it because we want to pay for this. We want to make it a big deal. So now, what happens to this six race thing? What happens to that?
I don't think people give a flying bleep about it. Baffert was right when you're right, too. Baffert said, once the Triple Crown is done, once the Belmont Stakes is run, most people aren't watching horse racing again until Kentucky Derby.
Yeah,
the following year. And
or
by the way, the numbers bear that out.
Well,
not even that. Tony, not even that now. It's only getting about $2 million against college football. It's now maybe the fourth or fifth most watched race. It goes Derby, $24 million this year. Preakness had $7 million. Belmont had $5 million. Kentucky Oaks had $2 million. The Breeders' Cup had $2 million. So it drops off really a lot. I just don't think people are going to care about this series. I really don't.
Yeah, that's my feeling. That's my feeling, is that they can run this and they can dress the horses up in pink if they want. Nobody's going to watch this. It's just not going to matter.
Yeah, $5 million bonus. Yeah, it's not like I'm getting paid the $5 million.
They don't have a structure. You don't even know. Do you accumulate points? Do you have to win all the races? I mean, nobody. It's vague at the moment. And
yeah,
what
they haven't even said who's paying for it. Who's paying this $5 million? They haven't even said that yet. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So my takeaway in this would be that what the Preakness has done. Once they got punched in the head, the Preakness punched back harder, it seems to me.
Yeah, and in fact, what Churchill and the New York Racing Association were doing was effectively throwing the counterpunch as a peremptory strike by moving and hastening their news conference a couple days early. So, yeah, I think it was a very big wallop by the Preakness, and if they do deliver in terms of a bigger purse and bonuses, then it means everything. You know, the answer to all your questions, right?
Yeah.
If they don't, they're the NIT.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just think the most important thing is that the Preakness needs to live so that young, drunken people can run on top of the bathrooms that are placed in the middle of the infield and fall down.
This whole Sunday thing, by the way, my understanding on that is because four of the next 6 years, Sunday will be Memorial Day weekend. They'll get better TV numbers that day. So that's
But aren't they going against? Aren't they going against the Indianapolis 500?
No, that's because actually, if NBC or pardon me, if Fox had its way, it would have had the huge lineup. The Indy 500 goes off at what, noon, 1 o'clock? It's done by 3 or 4 o'clock.
Okay.
Preakness doesn't go till 7. So they're, unless there's like a big rain delay in Indianapolis, they're fine with that.
Okie dokie. Thank you for trying to make sense of this to me.
Yeah,
thank you.
By the way, I should tell you, I hate to prolong something you're trying to get rid of, but the whole thing about who did you meet up with in the men's room, I had a very strange experience the other day, given the situation I'm in. I found myself next to Kentucky Derby winner Golden Tempo, and I can't tell you how humble I felt having that circumstance in the men's room.
Thank you, Ron.
Workshopping that one. Sorry. Thank you very much, Tony.
Ron Flatter, boys and girls. We'll take a break. Taylor Twellman will join us when we return to explain what's going on in soccer with FIFA and UEFA.
Yeah, we're quit. Yeah, we're
what are we doing here?
Yeah.
All right, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
A withering plant by the window. She can sing. You can't.
Oh.
She can sing. This is Ruby Greenberg. This is called The House You Built. She's fabulous. Michael, if independent singers like Ruby Greenberg want to send in their independent music and play it on this podcast, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com. And we have the promo code TKCORN available at Johnny O. With all the heat and humidity, go check out their featherweight line.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing to do. It's very hot in Washington.
Yes. And this song, by the way, released today. So if you'd like to get it, download
it,
wherever. Yeah,
it's wonderful.
It's brilliant.
Okay, she plays in Taylor Twellman, and we have, I know less about soccer than everybody in the world, but I have a few questions because soccer's been in the news lately. Before we get to the soccer, though, the last time we saw Taylor, he was co-hosting the Today Show. How did that work out? Did you have fun?
Yeah, I mean, nobody got fired, Tony, so that's a positive.
Yeah. Is it a career change? Are they going to come back to you, do you think?
There's potential, yes, sir. I've got a little more time on my MLS Apple deal, but the Today Show was a blast. First off, truly, it was the talent and, like, the background staff. It felt as if I was there for, like, 10 years. So similar to you and Michael when we do PTI and your crew, everyone made me feel so welcome. So, again, nobody got fired, and everybody had a good time. So at least I didn't wear out my welcome too fast.
It's great. We're happy for you. We think it's thrilling when people we know are on television, even though we are on television. It never means anything to me. I'd like to see my friends on television. Now, let me get to the fact that Mauricio Pochettino, who came in pretty late this year to coach the United States national team in the World Cup, has signed a deal extending him through 2030, the next World Cup. Your thoughts on having him back? Did you think, in fact, he would want to come back? Did you think, in fact, the United States would want him back?
That's a good question, honestly. First and foremost, you think about when you look at the world and the way international managers are working and the options they have. Pochettino is a club coach, Tony. So he likes the daily grind. He likes being with players. So this was his first at ever doing international. So I truly didn't know after the World Cup if he was going to be more interested in Tottenham, AC Milan, which from my sources, he wanted to see what was available before re-signing with the United States. Now, in saying that, it's the worst loss in modern day history for the U.S. men. So there's a part of me that believes that Pochettino's a little... embarrassed is the wrong word, but he's motivated to rectify that Belgium game. And so now he gets an entire cycle of World Cup qualifying, of more than likely a Copa America in 2028. Tony, he gets 4 years now. So whether he stays 4 years, I know there's a lot of skeptics out there because if Tottenham or another club calls, he may leave. The United States Federation has protected themselves financially with that. But if you ask me right now, which you are, beginning of August 26th, who's the best option out there? I don't think there's any debate that that's Mauricio Pochettino right now.
The story I read said he's getting $6 million a year. Is that a lot or a little in soccer? Because soccer is such a big deal. You wouldn't shock me if you told me that they get $10 and $12 million a year.
Yeah, no, it's a lot for the United States. They've gone outside for donors and all of that to get into that. So he's made more than any male or female for the United States Soccer Federation. Now, in saying that, it's about what he should get paid. Because if he was doing England, if he was doing Germany, France, the number's going to be the same. Now, you could argue that you may need to overpay him a little bit, Tony, to get him to come to the United States and take the job. But it's not astronomical. It's just a lot for the United States.
Okay. So I'm sure we are agreed that the World Cup was a huge success in the United States, that the viewership was astonishing. Only the Super Bowl got more viewers at any one time. Right on the heels of that, there was a story about the head of FIFA, I hope I pronounce his name correctly, Gianni Infantino, who it seemed to me, if I read the story correctly, was going to sell off parts of FIFA. Can you explain what his intent seemed to be?
Yeah, no, because it's not his to sell, Tony.
Right. Well,
so it's completely ridiculous that...
Yeah, my next question was, does he have the authority to do this? Yeah, go ahead.
No, he does not, because you are a custodian for the game. You're the governing body of the game. You're not the game. And so I think Infantino's head got a little too big because of, you know, the $12 billion plus that they made having the World Cup in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. I think he believed that he could pull this off. Now, Tony, for your listeners, a little background. UEFA, ironically, comes out against FIFA, yet they tried to start a Super League the same way and with the same financial backers. And they got heavily criticized and ridiculed for even trying to do that. So, listen, it's like that meme where there's three Supermen or Spider-Men pointing at each other. All of these people in the game, you are custodians of the game. You are not the game. And so I am very happy that immediately after the World Cup ends, that it is leaked out and it is completely shot down. I just find it a little ironic and sacrimonious a little bit that UEFA is steadfast that Infantino is 100% wrong when 18 months ago they tried to start a Super League.
So, what I'm going to say is going to sound hopelessly naive to you, but it is me. I don't really understand soccer. I was told when the Super League started, fans went crazy, and they said, no, we're not going to have this. And then UEFA, which represents the national teams of a lot of these places, I thought their position, the anti-Infantino position, was actually Churchillian. I thought it was moral. I thought it was brave. And it appeared to work immediately. And I think there's a lesson here that Americans, by and large, don't understand. I don't think we understand how important soccer is to these other countries, because we ain't got nothing like that. We have localized things, but we don't have anything like this, right?
No, because these are exactly. So let me use a comparison here. If the Olympic Committee went out and said, we are going to private equity the Olympics, every single country would be like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
That's exactly what FIFA was trying to, that's what Infantino was trying to do. You are just the governing body of all these nations. UEFA is all of Europe. So I agree with you. Is it brave of UEFA? Absolutely. But for any of us that are in the game, we're like, well, they learned from their mistake trying to start the Super League with the clubs. Here's the difference. Super League was for the clubs. This is for the national teams. And so UEFA right away was like, you can go ahead and do it. Not a single European country will play in the World Cup, which immediately killed the idea. But it is a little scary to me that there was enough belief internally. Now, the New York Times has reported over the last 24 hours that Infantino put real pressure on the FIFA executives 24 hours before the World Cup final to sign off on this. And I think better minds and smarter minds prevailed, Tony, from doing this. But you got to be kidding me. And I honestly, I think you have to question whether or not he should continue as the president.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, you know, what is his future? But before we get to that, let me take the Michael Wilbon position. My position on UEFA, and it's foolish for me to have a position because I don't even know what UEFA stands for. I guess United Football of Europe or something like that. But my position was this was very brave, and I admired it because it was a moral position. Wilbon's position was, they'll take the money. Everybody takes the money. But they didn't take the money, right, Taylor? They didn't take the money.
No. And so that's where it gets interesting. Listen, if you're asking about the Superliga and the money, UEFA had real, real financial backing, the same financial backing that had convinced Infantino and FIFA to try to do the same thing with the World Cup. Now, I know it's not the same thing, but I'm just keeping it on a macro level.
Right.
They didn't take the money. And listen, Wilbon's 100% correct. 99 out of 100 times, UEFA, FIFA, anyone in the world of sports will take the money. But not if it jeopardized the competition and the integrity of the competition. And that's even arguing going to 64 teams, Tony, is borderline jeopardizing the competition because that is about taking the money.
Yeah.
But this was a completely different scenario because the money would have gone into Infantino's pocket and not necessarily the game.
So who is with Infantino? Who sits in a room and says, yeah, this is a great idea? Who does that?
Well, that's the best part of you talking to me this morning. If you go on social media over the last 24 hours, the countries and the federations, which is what, so by the way, UEFA is United European Football Associations, okay? So right. The football association, so Mexico, Argentina, Brazil, Colombia, the United States, Morocco, all of these individual federations are now releasing statements for or against Infantino. And now they're saying, well, we're not for the private equity money of the World Cup, but we like his leadership. He's now asking for the support to save his job. And by the way, as you just called me, Argentina released their statement. Mexico released their statement. So this is where this gets very interesting of whether or not Infantino continues. I don't know. UEFA is saying right now that they want no one wants Infantino to continue, but now the South American constituents, the American, the North American, Central American, African, the individual federations coming out, Tony, now it gets real interesting.
So what is the, does the United States have a position to this point?
I was cleaning up dog puke right before you called me, so bear with me here.
Yeah, it's the title of the show.
I haven't seen the United States statement, but I read Mexico's this morning, Argentina, and one of the African ones, but I have not seen United States yet, no.
So I'll ask the speculative question. 3 years from today, you know, when people begin to gear for the World Cup, 3 years from today, do you think Gianni Infantino will have this job as the head of FIFA?
Oh, man, it's such a good... I mean, the fact that he was bribing Morocco for their votes to then give them the final of 2030.
Yeah,
like, Tony, I don't know. My gut says no. My brain says yes, he is.
Okay. All right, it's a pleasure to talk with you. Go clean up the dog puke. We know.
I mean,
by God, we know what that's like.
Never dying moment here at this household. Yeah.
Talk to you soon. Thanks, Taylor.
See you, buddy.
Taylor Twellman, boys and girls. It's a good show today on topics we never would talk about. yeah, okay. Email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Here comes Tony. Baby.
It's my favorite. It is. I love them all. I love that one the most.
Got to get them
hot
back
pink
together.
Hangover. Do you want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad for us?
Yes, please? Hot bagels today. We're always excited about that. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you. Then pop on in and you'll be thrilled.
Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, Michael, I have a great affection for you and you live a rich and interesting life, but you're a bad man, not an attorney. If your intention was to have me committed, you should have kept me in Wisconsin, where the arrest report, the videotape, eyewitness reports of my inappropriate behavior would have had jurisdictional relevance. I have no criminal record in the state of New York, and the single determining criterion for involuntary commitment is danger. Is the defendant a danger to himself or others? You think you got the horses for that? Well, good luck and God bless, but the last place you want to see me is in court. That's from Michael Clayton. That's Wilkinson, right?
Yep,
the actor.
Yep, Tom Wilkinson.
It's just such a great movie. Thanks to our guests today, Ron Flatter and Taylor Twellman. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Odyssey. If you get show through Apple Podcasts, please leave us a review. From Chad Littlefield in Noonan, Georgia. Killer shirt, Captain Farmer. It's going to look great under your cape the next time you're on stage with Norwegian Soft Kitten. P.S. Could you please tell my Uncle Mike to eat it? Glennon Allen, Norwegian soft kitten. There are two reasons why Post Sex Nachos has never claimed that you played bass with them. First, you never played bass with them. Chase Mueller is their bassist and a founding member of the band. Second, it appears you don't remember your confrontation with Chase that occurred after a show during our 1991-92 winter tour when you played bass for us. We had just finished playing a gig at Lindenwood University just outside St. Louis, and we had torn that auditorium apart. When we exited the stage, we found the lads from Post Sex Nachos there. After Mitch, Sammy, and Hunter had congratulated us on the show, Chase looked at you, Tony, and said your bass playing was acceptable. You gave Chase the stink eye, and that's when the bass off began. You still had your bass strapped to you, and you plugged it into a backstage amp and let fly with a stunning riff. Chase grabbed a bass that was backstage, plugged it into an amp, and Chase let fly with a fabulous riff. You responded, and for the next 5 minutes, you and Chase hurled one astonishing, thundering bass riff after another at each other. Just when it appeared that we had a standoff on our hands, you let fly with a short bass solo from Paul Simon's You Can Call Me Al. Jaws dropped, eyes boggled, heart stopped. At that point, Chase removed his bass, gave you a single nod, and the lads from Post Sex Nachos exited without a word. To this day, there has been a pleasant relationship between the two bands, but underneath that pleasantness, the result of that bass off simmers on a back burner. And it was that bass off that cemented your legendary status in the music world. Well done, Hot Bagel. It's brilliant.
Slapping the bass.
It's just brilliant. Glennon Allen, just brilliant. This email is from Dr. Steve Gerber of South Bend by way of Oceanside, New York, South Shore, Long Island. Dear Dr. Grandpa, Captain Potato Farmer, Buster mentions his sister Hannah is a tomato expert, and you don't inquire further? Where is your journalistic reflex to jump on that and find out more? Can you get her on the show? There are way more tomato growers listening than potatoes. We need help. And please tell Coach Bill Mountford and Glenn Gerber to eat it. Yes, we should call Hannah.
Yeah, we're going beefsteak, heirloom?
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean,
we need help.
We need some, yeah, because our tomatoes, while the plants have grown large, they are producing no fruit. Steve Gilmore. Now in Rising Star, Texas. Dear Potato Man, have you tried unplugging the tomatoes and plugging them back in? Sometimes that helps. From Al DeLuca. Once, I had a teacher named Al DeLuca in high school. James DeLuca, I'm sorry, not Al. Dear Dr. Tony, once the garden soil temperatures reach 80 degrees or above, tomatoes stop producing fruit. So unfortunately, your tomato plants are done. Yank them. And that's what happened.
Well, we'd like a second opinion.
That's what happened. From Rico in Sequoia National Forest. Per your tomato aggravation, here's the solution. Use the Google machine and search for eco-friendly elm dirt. Here, I'll help you. www.elmdirt.com. I'm in 90-degree plus heat 4 weeks running. I have one beefsteak, one slicer, and two Roma plants. I'm going to harvest well over 50 when they all ripen. I'm already harvesting sweet cherry tomatoes, and I picked about 100 already without making a dent. Elm dirt. Use it or get ripped
it's
off at the
juice.
Road stand. Huh?
Plant juice?
Plant juice.
Elm dirt.
We'll yeah. Get some of this.
Well, let's put that in the special pile.
Yeah.
We've never tried fertilizer. Maybe that's it.
I used garden soil, the garden soil thing, the topsoil. I used that. From Chad. Trade now for later, but tomorrow never comes, even with nine arms. Yes, that is my fear and my look at it. Dan Hughes, Potomac Falls, Virginia. The show always provides me with something every pod. While I was listening to the latest, I came up with the name of my new book, Nine Arms, The True Story of the 2040 Washington Nationals World Series Championship Run.
2040.
Chapter one is called The Trade That Set It All in Motion. The movie might be on Peacock by then. From David Epstein in New York, when I worked at NBC a couple of decades ago, we were compensated in part via a commission plan, which paid us five times a year. One year, they announced that the mid-year payment would now become a year-end payment. Instead of being paid in July, the money would come the following January. I said, so we're losing a payment? And they responded, no, it's just moving. So I said, oh, we're getting six payments next year. And they replied, no, five. So I calmly pointed out that if we were supposed to receive five payments and one of them was moving, it stands to reason that next year's number of payments would increase by one. Otherwise, we were losing it. And they replied that I was misunderstanding. It was simply delayed, not gone. I then less calmly told them they were idiots, or perhaps they thought we were, and remarked, if we were previously getting five payments every year, but now for 1 year we're getting four, that's losing a payment. I continued by saying, the question is, how long do I have to work here to get back the payment you're skipping this year? And the answer apparently is forever. Welcome to my world, fans of the Washington Nationals. If every year is traded for next year, how long are you going to have to wait to be a winner? Mm-hmm. Forever. I left NBC soon after and never received that payment. Wishing you Nats fans better luck.
Oof.
Pretty good email.
By the way, Elm Dirt ordered will be here Sunday.
Tremendous. And we just put it in and see what happens?
I think that's the plan.
All right. Seth Shaner, New Albany, Ohio. You're lamenting that tomorrow will never come for the Nats? Welcome to the crowd. Signed a Cincinnati Reds fan. The Reds have not won a playoff series since 1995 and appear to be in perpetual rebuild mode.
Oof.
Paul Frampton.
Not Peter.
From Lindsay, Ontario in Canada. Get ready to yell at your remote and Michael on Sunday. The Nats are on Peacock again.
Oh.
Why are they always on Peacock? All right. From Tom Pace, 8-2-14. Hey, you got 2 out of 3. Batting 667. Hey. Not very good, but there were some worse. Tom Pace, associate professor of English. Okay, John Carroll University, the birthplace of football coaches.
Oh,
Andrew Bowers, Poolsville, Maryland. On Wednesday's show in the mailbag, you mentioned Liz's wedding date, 11-11-22. Couldn't be beat. I'd like to enter my wedding date for consideration, June 9th, 2012. 6-9-12. It gets better. We had the ceremony at 1 and the reception at 3. 1-3-6-9-12. Boom.
That's the date.
From James Provençal in Los Angeles. This one's for Dr. Captain Potato Man and the whole gang. I'm thrilled to announce I'll be traveling to D.C. for the first time next week for a work conference downtown at the Westin. Years of listening to the pod are finally going to pay major dividends, I hope. I fly in Tuesday. I'll be at the Nats game against the Cubs for $5 Tuesdays. Good move. But yeah. I would love any and all must-hit food recommendations for my quick trip to D.C. Which spots do you all feel are must-hit essentials? Eating is my favorite pastime besides listening to the pod. You may recall my email last year about the Wilbon Pizza at Las Sorteds in L.A. I get around. Seriously, though, many thanks and much appreciation to Dr. Tony, Michael, Nigel, the whole crew for the recommendation all the years of laughs. Anything, Michael, that you want to say that guy should eat? He should eat at?
There's a great little restaurant, Shea Billy Sued, down in Georgetown. If you can get a reservation there, it's awesome.
Or Duke Zebert's. Get the salad there.
Duke is not there anymore.
Well, they can look around.
Chef Shea Billy Sue?
To Sud, yes.
So, okay, that's nice. Steve the Sycophant, a belated farewell, dear Satch, to the great saxophonist Plas Johnson, who left us last month at the age of 94. Top-level studio musician playing on hundreds of recordings with such immortals as Nat King Cole, Frank Sinatra, and the Beach Boys. What puts him above so many other outstanding players was his classic solo on Henry Mancino's theme from the Pink Panther, Oh, that's great.
That's brilliant.
That's great. We'll go on long after the movie disappears from late night. R.I.P. Mr. Johnson. From James Ostkin, I hope I pronounced that correctly, in Glenmont, Maryland. It's your friendly neighborhood rabbit 4-H parent here. Please remind Michael that this year's Montgomery County Ag Fair opens on Friday, August 14th through Saturday, August 22nd. Fair information can be found at MCAG, Montgomery County Ag Fair.com, especially info on parking. I hope you're all able to attend and come see and maybe buy a rabbit.
Ooh.
And all the other animals,
nice.
Too, I suppose. P.S.
Don't
my son
treasures.
Yeah,
my son treasures his official Nats Hawaiian shirt that he got at the Goodwill in Rockville, though I'm sure Saturday shirt and shorts will be of the highest quality, not something you'd expect to be paired with a free bowl of soup. I have the shirts and the shorts.
Yeah.
They're very good.
Are you always wearing them as a pair?
No, I sleep in the shorts, and I don't wear the shorts with the shorts. I look ridiculous.
The shorts can't for the daytime?
The shorts are at night. The shirt is during the day. We can't buy a rabbit. Did I tell you? Jessie was chasing a rabbit and knocked into my leg and opened up a huge cut in my leg. She was going, you know, rabbit speed, 40 miles an hour.
Yeah, she loves to chase the
rabbit. She'll eat the rabbit.
Yeah, she will.
She will eat the rabbit. She's done that. Tim Cree in Fort Collins, Colorado. So glad you closed the Monday show with the Buckaroo Banzai quote. See, my wife is taking Italian lessons on her phone, and yesterday she learned the word for tea, which is spelled T-E, but pronounced Tay, T-A-Y. So she's saying Tay, Tay, Tay over and over into her phone, and I'm saying Big Booty, Tay, Tay. At my age, making my wife want to hit me is one of life's best joys. From Brett Hobbs, who's temporarily, as we know, in Yellowstone National Park, Bison 3, Tourist 0.
Oof.
So far, one took off after a little girl who was getting too close, a grandpa going for a bison flip, and now a bison puncturing a vehicle tire. P.S., we sell a lot of coconut water here because it is a great drink to rehydrate after a long hike. I've got to try.
Yeah, everyone says it's good for hydration.
And one more from Mike Roseberry in State College, Pennsylvania. God is eyewitness. I saw a guy in a purple cape walking across the Wegmans parking lot yesterday. You're coming back into style, Captain Chatter. It's only a matter of time until dungarees make the scene. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
You want to talk real customers? Kid, that's me. I'm like the mayor of Duncan.
I go from Marblehead to Revere.
Open a window, let the fresh breeze in. Take a sip of my coffee, hear the birds chirping. Shake out the dusty curtain, put a book on the shelf. These four walls are made to be lived in. softly lit room. Candles burn as we talk through the night. We're at it so long, the wick turns to smoke, while each word you say sets me right. Familiar.